You're free now. Free to stream beyond your wildest dreams. Free to be everything you imagine, and then some. That's how it feels to have Quantum Fiber. Your world unleashed. Learn more at quantumfiber.com. Limited availability. Service in select locations only.
KSL at Night was recorded and produced this afternoon. KSL at Night. Some of Utah's top political specialists join a roundtable on the day's biggest stories. KSL is at 102.7 FM and on every smart speaker when you say play KSL News Radio.
And welcome to another edition of KSL at Night. I'm your host this evening, Greg Skordis, and I'm joined again by Adam Gardner. Adam, you've been sort of thrown into the fire here on KSL at Night. This is your third show in a row this week, isn't
it? It's like more tiring than I thought it was going to be.
And we're going to see how you do, but last time I was with you Wednesday, you nailed it. You were like smooth as silk, and you did a good job last night, too.
We'll figure out a way to go on the other side of that tonight, too.
By the way, listeners, if you want to get breaking news, just text the word breaking to 57500. Text the word breaking to 57500, and you will get breaking news from KSL. And we have some breaking news. And if our listeners have heard the intro, this show is pre-recorded. So by the time it airs this evening, the answer to the questions that we're asking will know. There was some argument today in the 3rd District Court over whether or not Phil Lyman's choice for lieutenant governor is constitutionally allowed to sit in that position. And we're incredibly lucky to have Phil join us because he's right in the middle of this litigation. I think you're just on break right now. Phil, thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Yeah, Greg, thanks. Yeah, the judge said, I'm going to take a recess. And I thought, oh, I am right on time to join.
Yes.
To join KSL
well,
tonight.
If he comes back,
if
he comes back, we'll turn you loose. So, break it down to our listeners. What was the issue before the court today?
Well, there's two issues. One is the procedural issue, which is why was Lane Bingater not allowed to submit his application for candidacy on Friday, on Monday when we went in. And then the second issue is residency and what is the interpretation of 5 years next preceding the election. And that's what the lieutenant governor's office is arguing that he doesn't meet the requirements, but they didn't file a motion. So it's largely procedural, but I think the judge wants to swallow the whole, camel in one thing, so that which is probably good.
Yeah, so I'm reading the Utah Constitution, specifically Article 7, Section 2, and when a person applies for office, let's talk about specifically your office, the office of governor or lieutenant governor, the person shall be 30 years of age or older at the time of the election, and it says no person is eligible for any of the offices provided above unless at the time of the election the person is a qualified voter and has been a resident citizen of the state for 5 years next preceding the election. I mean, talk about awkward language.
Next preceding is weird.
Right. Does that
mean how do you precede something that comes forward?
That in the years preceding the election they'd been a resident for five or more years, or does it mean in the 5 years immediately preceding the election? Because if it was that, you would expect them to have used that sort of language, and I think that's what's isn't that part of the issue here, maybe we're sort of overthinking the language here?
I mean, you guys are the attorneys. You love this kind of stuff. So those kind of things. I look at it and say, okay, they've got to be a resident for 5 years. That's clear. And then 5 years next. So I say, well, I'll be 60, next May. So 60 years next, preceding the election. So so then the question comes down, does that have to happen immediately? And there's other places in the code where it says immediate five, or in fact, other states that say 5 years next, immediately preceding. And it's honestly interesting to listen to the attorneys argue both sides of this, but the law is very clear that that when it comes to candidacy, that the lieutenant governor's office is required to be liberal in favor of the candidate. And they're just saying, no, there's no question here. He does not qualify. We're saying, well, there actually is a question here, so there's a process for that too, and that's where we get back to the process. The process is you file the application for candidacy, then someone does a written objection to that, which has not happened. So now it looks like interference to me.
Okay, yeah, walk us through that process. So At the Republican state convention last Saturday, you gave your speech. You won in convention. You announced your lieutenant governor pick, Lane Bangeter. You brought him up on stage. The convention kind of unanimously ratified that and said, yeah, we're good. I don't know why delegates go, yep, we approve. But you did a good job. But they did that. And so walk us through the next process of, like, you have to go to the lieutenant governor's office, file some paperwork. And is the argument here that the lieutenant governor can't investigate that at the time of your filing? It's just kind of an affidavit. Like, this, I swear that I'm 30 years old and I'm a resident of the state of Utah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. There's they can certainly investigate, and they can be prepared with a written objection, you know, receive the filing, file the written objection, and then we'd be having a different type of court hearing, but probably very, very similar to the one we're having now, which would be not about the procedural issue, but would just be about the question of what does that mean and does he qualify, and the judge could rule on that. So the fact that they didn't do the process is problematic, and it still is problematic because they still don't have a written objection, and there's nothing that triggers a question like this other than a written objection, according to Utah code. So they haven't done a written objection, and maybe they go, maybe they'll go do one during this recess. I don't know.
Phil, is there an argument that can be made here when you talk about liberal construction in favor of the candidate that, I mean, if you're not convicted of a felony, you're not in prison, or you do have some time in the state of Utah and you're 30 years of age, that maybe you ought to just be on the ballot. I mean, I don't know that it seems like this 5 years, the next 5 years or the previous 5 years, I don't know. And I'm not trying to espouse for one argument or the other, but it seems like put him on the ballot.
Well, and it's for the lieutenant governor, which is almost, I don't even know if the lieutenant governor is technically an elected position because it is part and parcel with the governor's ticket.
Good point.
So yeah, that even takes it. If it was the governor, it would be probably more reasonable to argue this. But for the lieutenant governor, it seems like, it really just seems like interference, honestly.
Well, and we kind of had an issue down in your home county, in San Juan County, with a residency issue of someone running. Was it to fill your county commission seat?
The
argument was that someone lived in Arizona but was running for San Juan County commissioner, and they let him on the ballot.
Right, and they said, well, there's no controversy until he's elected. If he's not elected, then there's no controversy.
Interesting.
Yet in this situation, they're saying, oh, no, we're not going to even let this person on the ballot. And so, yeah, a huge double standard there. So a double standard with Celeste Molloy, a little bit of a double standard with Governor Huntsman when he was running last cycle.
Oh, interesting. Because he had been serving in the administration in various capacities and hadn't necessarily lived in Utah. You hadn't thought about that.
I think there was an objection filed on his, and if there wasn't an objection, maybe it was just in the media that people were raising the question, but
Phil,
yeah, that resolved.
We've only got about a minute left here, but I would assume that you've put, notwithstanding whatever the judge decides, you've put a lot of time and money and effort into your lieutenant governor selection. I mean, you've probably got, you know, advertisements done. You've got your campaign information coming out. It's got to be, it would have to be a horrible consequence for you to have to just start that process over.
Yeah, I mean, elections move fast, so you're always pivoting, and certainly once I selected Lane, which was very late, you know, really close to the convention, we sent it straight out to the graphic designers. Hey, we need to get banged on the signs and on the billboards, and so we've done all that, and then we just kind of put everything on hold for a few days. You know, and we thought maybe we should just start advertising it, but we thought, you know, out of respect to the process, to the court, we didn't want to, I don't know, poke the process in the eye. But
sure.
But yeah, we're losing really valuable time between now and when the ballots start being mailed out here in a few weeks.
Well, we'll be interested to see what happens. And thank you for joining us in the middle of arguments before a court, Phil.
Oh, I appreciate you having me on. I really do. Thank you.
When we come back after the break, we're going to talk about an update on the Inland Port Authority and some issues going on in Weber County. Stay with us.
911 emergency.
They kidnapped my son.
What would you do if your child disappeared and someone you trusted was responsible?
We thought he cared for McKay, when in fact he didn't care for anyone.
Listen to Ransom now at ransompodcast.com.